The people of South Sudan finally get their own country tomorrow, something not many people thought was possible during 5 decades of civil war that killed an estimated 2 million people. But 6 months ago, as part of a deal to end the civil war, more than 99% of the South Sudanese voted to split from Northern Sudan. And that's the separation that becomes official tomorrow. Military parades and celebrations will be staged in front of dozens of visiting world leaders to mark the world's newest nation. But when the party ends, South Sudan must face some grim realities. It will be one of the most underdeveloped countries on the planet. Fergus Nicol hosts the BBC's World Today program, and he joins us from Juba, the capital city of this new nation. And Fergus, before we talk about some of the challenges, what's it like to be in South Sudan right now? What's the mood like?
You know, Deb, it's been incredibly exciting. I've been here for the last couple of weeks, traveling around three enormous states here, Central Equatoria, Jonglei, and Upper Nile. And everywhere I've been, there's been an immense sense of expectation. Looking forward to Friday midnight, Saturday Independence Day. Just now out in the streets here in Juba, the cars are driving by with flags. You see impromptu parades. You see the group of Warup tribes people from Western Equatoria dancing and singing down the main highway of the capital. It's an incredibly exciting time.
And remind us of how we got here. Can you just tell us briefly about the split between the north and the south and what happened?
Well, the split happened even before the British colonial occupation in Sudan ended. And the date is very specific, and it's still a national holiday here in the south of Sudan. A mutiny in a place called Torit on the 18th of August, 1955. And that triggered the first Sudanese civil war. It pitted the Khartoum government against an armed opposition, which evolved over the next few years into something called the Anyanya movement. It's Maridi for snake venom. That was set up in 63, and they were flat out secessionist. Now, that war lasted until 72 in March, when there was a military ruler in Khartoum at the time, Jafar Nimeiri. He signed the Addis Ababa agreement with the Anyanya leader, Joseph Lagu. And that peace kind of held for quite a while, 11 years, but the grievances that the southerners had expressed were never fully met. 16th May 1983, that's the next key date. John Garang, a figure in national history, who died in 2005, he joined another mutiny. He led his men to Ethiopia and started the Sudan People's Liberation Army. And the SPLA takes power here in Juba on Saturday. And in summary, Deb, you have 17 years of war, 11 years of relative peace, 22 more years of war. No wonder it's underdeveloped.
Right. So what would you say are the main differences between the north and the south, in terms of ethnicity and religious background and things like that?
The simple answer that you'll often hear, and most news agencies will tell you this, is that the north is Arab and Muslim and the south is African and either Christian or animist. Of course, it's much more complex, and where the border will lie from midnight to night, you get a lot of fluidity, and there are a lot more Muslims in a town like Malakal, for example, in Upper Nile State, than there are here in Juba. So it's not entirely Arab, African, Muslim, non-Muslim, but generally that is the trend. There are, of course, a lot of differences within the south, and the tribal differences are something that are going to have to be addressed extremely seriously. But it's worth saying that just moments before I came to talk to you, the Khartoum government said, we are the first formally to recognize the Republic of South Sudan.
And what does the north think about all of this?
Well, that swift political recognition appears unexpectedly conciliatory on the part of Khartoum, because there's absolutely no question that the government in Khartoum has been carrying out a succession of extremely inflammatory military actions. So there's a lot of suspicion in the south. And in the north, I think there's an ambivalent attitude. There are plenty of people who are willing to say, well, good riddance, we don't need the south. There are pragmatists who say, we certainly need the oil. And there are other people who, despite the fact this war has been going on for so long, are profoundly, almost spiritually somehow, upset that the unity of the Sudanese territory is going to be completely cut in half.
Now, among the challenges that South Sudan is going to face, aside from the oil that you just mentioned, which is a huge asset and is mostly in the South now, is also education, because what this war has done to the country, as you said, has pretty much ravaged it. And you know, in one of your reports this week, you focused on education in South Sudan, and you went to a church school in Malakal, and you spoke with some students there. We have a clip of that. Let's listen.
I've come from the north and I've seen a lot of suffering, and I'm happy to be back. And I want to encourage all of you to work hard so we will build our new nation, so that our people can forget the troubles of the past.
Wow, if half of the children in that school were able to translate their promise into real jobs, real contributions in the future South Sudan, then the place is going to be in fantastic shape, because St. Peter's Episcopal Church School in Malakal there was a really inspiring place. The girl there you heard, she said it just right. This country has been set back so profoundly. We've had no education, illiteracy levels are enormous, the roads are absolutely nightmarish. We are so far back that we have to crack on together at an incredibly determined rate to catch up with the rest of the world. So in the education sector, they desperately need money. That was a private school, by the way. They are paying a relatively small amount by US standards to get their kids into that school, less than $100 a year, but that is more than many families can afford. But that is the way they're shaping their children's lives. They're getting great teaching, and they will contribute in the future.
Well, as we say goodbye, Fergus, we're going to hear a bit of the new national anthem for South Sudan. The closing words, saluting our martyrs whose blood cemented our national foundation, we vow to protect our nation. Oh, God bless South Sudan. We've been talking with the BBC's Fergus Nicol. He is in Juba, South Sudan. Fergus, thanks for being with us.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks.
Arise, shine, raise your flag with the guiding star, and sing songs of freedom with joy, for peace, liberty and justice shall forevermore reign. So long.